Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 145, recorded January 2nd, 2013. Greetings, everyone. As you may have already noticed, Kelly's not with us right now, although she'll be joining us later on at the end of the show today. Well, we've got something from Tony in New York. We also have a new contributor, Jaap, in the Netherlands. I hope I'm saying your name right. We've got a little update on our Betis situation, and we have our long-promised present for you at the end of the show, and that's the part Kelly will be joining us for. So let's go to Tony in New York first. He says, "Hello, Russ and Kelly. Happy New Year. I've been wanting for a while to take the plunge into shrimp keeping, and now is finally the time. I really like the idea of having some yellow cherry shrimp, but wanted to know if you have any advice on color. For example, I've heard that some have subdued coloration, while others have colors that are vibrant and really pop. I think I'd be interested in the latter. What advice can you give? I suppose shopping with the local fish store is a good idea, but I'm not sure that they carry shrimp, so I may have to go with an online source. And if I was able to get some brightly colored shrimp, would the colors likely remain across generations? On another note, I was told by one fish keeper that CYS, or cherry yellow shrimp, or it could be crystal yellow shrimp, are hard to keep than CRS, or crystal red shrimp. However, I am not sure if that's so. Perhaps he was thinking of crystal yellows. What do you think? Here's to shrimp in the new year, Tony in New York." Well, thanks, Tony, and happy new year to you as well. Let's analyze here your situation, what you want to do. Okay, so your first question was about coloration and how to deal with, how to make sure you get some that are vibrantly colored. Well, shrimp colors are dependent on several factors, and I would say the three main factors are genetics, and environment, and I guess environment is a whole lot of sub-factors, and sex. So, first, genetics. It is true that most varieties of shrimp genetically can vary in the intensity of their coloration. This is true of red cherry shrimp and apparently of yellow cherry shrimp as well. And I would say that if you get a good strain of shrimp that tend to be yellow when you purchase them, you have a better chance of keeping them yellow, and I guess that tends to follow, but it's something to consider. So if you can get some photos of the actual shrimp you're going to be purchasing, that should help with that. Now, as far as the environment goes, if you can provide very good water conditions, of course, as I'm sure you already know, most aquarium shrimp are very sensitive to ammonia and to nitrite, and actually to nitrates as well, although not to such a degree. But if you're keeping your water quality very high with no ammonia, no nitrite, and low nitrates, that will benefit the shrimp and help keep them healthy. Now, yellow cherry shrimp as well as red cherry shrimp and any other color morphs of that species are pretty tolerant in terms of pH. You can get a fair variety there, and they'll breed and thrive in various conditions as long as the water conditions are otherwise good. Varied food will also help there, making sure they get a good varied diet. And although I'm not certain that the types of color enhancers that are used for fish are necessary for the red coloration of shrimp, I would tend to think they were, and I would probably supplement their diet with some all-around color food with things like carotenes, astaxanthins in it, and so on. And then, as far as sex goes, of course, the males are just duller in color than the females. That's just the way it goes. The brightest shrimp you'll get tend to be the mature females, and the males will just never get to quite that degree, although you will notice some variation among the males as well. I would say that online sources are generally good bets if they're reputable. For example, if you're using Aquabid and you see someone who sells a lot of shrimp and they have really good feedback ratings, I wouldn't see any problem with that. Shrimp tend to ship well, especially younger shrimp. That is something to keep in mind. Adult shrimp don't necessarily ship quite as well or acclimate to new conditions quite as well as the younger ones, but they grow quickly, they mature quickly, so it's not really a big deal. You might be waiting a few more weeks for the shrimps to start reproducing, but that's not, I don't think, a major consideration. And as far as the colors remaining across generations, well, there are a couple of things to keep in mind. One is that all color morphs of the Neocaridina will interbreed. In other words, the red cherry shrimp, the blues, the yellows, the oranges, the wild coloration, they will all interbreed without any hesitation whatsoever. So I would say if you are going to get the yellow shrimp and you want the color to remain across generations, don't add any other shrimp of any other color varieties of that species. It is possible to keep, for example, crystal red shrimp with them because they're a different species and wanting to breed. But yeah, that will go a long way. And also, you will want to select for them somewhat. So maybe have a tank where you keep your best and most colorful breeders, and then you have a cull tank where you keep the ones you don't want to contribute to the gene pool in. Something like that. And that will help keep them bright. Now, another question you had was there's the issue that online there's some confusion with the acronyms used for this species of shrimp, the Neocaridina, and the crystal red shrimp. Sometimes you'll see CRS standing for red cherry shrimp and sometimes for crystal red shrimp. Now, to my understanding, the acronym CRS refers properly to crystal red shrimp, whereas RCS refers to red cherry shrimp. But as I say, on the internet, that's confused. And so I think by analogy, that's also confused when you're talking about CYS and YCS. But I would agree that any of the crystal shrimps are more difficult to keep than the red cherry shrimp or any other color morph of the same species, partly because the water conditions they tend to prefer water on the more acidic side. So also with lower mineral contents, you need to often use RO water as a component of their water and things like that. Not that they're super difficult, but that is one issue, so they are a little bit harder to keep. Whereas crystal red shrimp, you can keep in tap water that has been dechlorinated and in a tank that has properly been cycled in nearly any commonly used or common water condition. For example, you could be in pH that's 6.8 or pH that's 8.2, and as long as they're acclimated slowly, they can do well in it. So there you go. So I think, as you guessed here, that this other fish keeper was probably thinking of crystal yellows, which are also known by other names. I think golden shrimp or golden crystal shrimp, something like that, or golden tiger shrimp, I think I've heard a couple. That's probably what they're thinking of. So hopefully that helps, and best of luck with your shrimpy endeavors.
Okay, and now to Jaap in the Netherlands. He says, "Hi there. As this is my first time to react, my first order of business is to give you a huge compliment on the show. Keep up the good work." Well, thank you. He continues, "I need advice on my aquarium, though. I have an aquarium of approximately 900 liters with dimensions 170 by 60 by 100 centimeters, width times depth times height. I keep Malawi cichlids in it, and so just a minimum of plants, which, by the way, barely survive." Well, that makes sense considering Malawi cichlids and their conditions, and the fact that they like to nibble on plants. "I enjoy this tank very much, but one thing annoys me. When I built it, I made a custom background using styrofoam, Portland cement, and epoxy. The effect was stunning. The rocks look completely realistic. A video made shortly after the build is here." He provides a link, and we'll put that on the show page so you can check it out. "I have, and I must admit, it looks stunning. If I could have a tank like that, I would be very happy. As you can see, both the real stones in the background are light gray with some white accents. However, over time, algae began to grow. I have no problem with algae for the most part, as they are a healthy part of an aquatic environment and the fish like to graze them. But it has the side effect of making the whole tank look like one monotonous dark brown hole. I've tried scraping it off with a brush, which worked, but I damaged the background in the process, so I stopped doing that. I've heard your tips on lighting and CO2 in the last podcast. However, I'm not sure CO2 is a good solution, as there are few plants in my tank and the water is not very hard where I live. Malawi seem to like hard water better. Changing the lighting might change things, however, I'd like to have a better idea what to go shopping for. Currently, I have two 54-watt T5s. Usually, I only use one, which will burn for as long as we're up. usually between 8 and, let's see, that's 10. So 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. Finally, about moving large aquaria. When I bought this beauty, the previous owner already had it on a cargo pallet. We used a pallet truck to get it to a small truck, a glass transport truck that had a layer of styrofoam on the bottom. We were with 7 strong people to lift the thing in. It all went very well. So that last is in response to our request for telling us about how you moved large aquaria. So that's some a good explanation of some methods that you used for doing that. And it sounds like putting the styrofoam on the bottom, that's a good idea. You can absorb a lot of jarring that way. So let's address the issue of the algae now. And by the way, welcome to the show. Thank you for contributing. So we've got... I agree with you about the CO2. I don't think supplemental carbon... Now, I think I've misspoken a couple of times on the show recently when I said CO2 and I meant carbon supplementation, because when we're adding these liquid carbon supplements, we're not actually adding CO2, we're adding some form of carbon. So I need to make sure that I speak correctly. It is, of course, possible to add supplemental CO2 to your tank if you're adding it in a gaseous form, but if you're adding a liquid, I need to make sure that I say carbon rather than CO2. Okay, anyway, I agree. I don't think CO2, either gaseous or in a liquid form of carbon supplementation, would be very effective in this situation for a couple of reasons. One, you're not trying to get a lot of plants to grow. Two, if you were to add gaseous CO2, it would reduce the pH, which you don't really want to do with Malawi cichlids. And I think lighting could be a good way to go. Now, 254-watt T5s, and you're only using one. Now, 54 watts for a tank that big, that doesn't sound like a whole lot, like too much. It sounds like it's probably fine. But, of course, since it was a metric measurement, I don't have as clear an idea as I would have if it were in inches, but I have a rough idea of how big that is. I would say you might want to consider having the lights with a break in the middle. I've recently had some algae problems with a tank upstairs, a 20-gallon tank with about 55 watts on it, which is a little too high for not using, I think, CO2 supplementation. I'm just using liquid carbon supplementation. So it's a little bit, it was kind of an experiment, and it's shown that it's not really ideal because there's too many issues with algae. But what I have done fairly recently is change the photo period so that the light comes on about 8 or 9 a.m., stays on for an hour or two, turns off for several hours, then turns back on and is on for a good part of the afternoon and into the early evening, and then turns off. But what this break of several hours does, or at least many people who deal with algae have tried this, is just sort of give the algae a starvation period in between the lighting periods. It doesn't seem to affect plants so much, but it affects algae. So you might want to try that, like in your peak viewing times, because you're not actually trying to grow plants, but say you like to view it in the morning and then you view it in the evening. Put a 4 or 5 hour dark period in between on a timer, and then that may help with the algae. You can see what that does. Of course, you could look to an algae crew, but with the Malawi cichlids already grazing on the algae, and you have a limited list of algae crew members that you could keep with Malawi cichlids, I would say the first line of defense might be to try that. There are some other things you could think about, depending on where your setup is. One would be to outcompete the algae by planting a sump somewhere, if you could, and light that maybe during the night when the other tank is dark, and use a lot of very fast growing plants in there. And you might reduce the nutrients in the main tank so much that the algae wouldn't have much to grow on. But that would be a pretty large project. It's a fascinating one, and there are a lot of aquarists who do things like that. But I would say your first line of defense might be to try that dark period in the daytime, but not when you're going to be viewing your tank a lot.
and then let us know how it goes. Hopefully that's helpful. And thanks again for joining us today.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Pawns and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nell.
Okay, now we're going to give a little update on our beta project. Of course, we told you last week that Kelly had suggested that we put our females into our 55 and turn it into a very large beta sorority. We did that this week. We did the transfer. So now we have 4 goldfish in our goldfish tank. We have a number of females, which I haven't counted exactly, in the 55, combining the sorority and the spawning tank of these betas that were raised in. And so now they're all doing fine in the 55, looking very nice. We have, of course, the fish from our spawn and then several other fish from various dynasties, if you will. And so there are various color combinations from red to solid blue to our Cambodias to some that are kind of an iridescent white. So it's kind of fun to have the rainbow of bettas in there. And they're all happy and comfortable. So good to see. As far as our males go, we sold, I think, 3 fish locally, 14, and that's to individuals. We sold 14 to pet stores, or rather, we traded them for credit. And let's see, just sold 3 on Aquabid. They shipped out earlier today. And so now we have 7 fish left, 7 males that we have to find a home for. And so we've made a lot of progress recently, and the pet store seemed happy with the ones that we got to them. So we are hoping that in another couple of weeks, when the pet stores have sold the ones that they've got, that they might want the remainder of the fish that we're trying to find homes for. Of course, we're going to keep a few of them ourselves. It would be sad to have to get rid of them all, become attached to certain of them particularly as well. So anyway, it's been a fun adventure, and our kids have collected all the data they need for their science projects, so they haven't analyzed it yet, but they've collected it, so it's been fun. And I think Kelly will be happy to have the hearth in the living room back of the fireplace once we've kind of decommissioned the beta raising area. All right, now, the moment you've all been waiting for, the long-awaited surface area song.
Okay, so before we sing the song, hi, by the way, I'm back.
We need to preface this.
Yeah, because this is your late Christmas present and your Happy New Year's present and Mick's birthday present. But Russ is losing his voice.
As you probably have noticed throughout the course of the show, and it's getting steadily worse as I speak.
And we don't have any accompaniment.
Because that would be illegal.
And it just doesn't sound very good on my voice. but... anyways,
we're going to do it anyway.
We're going to do it anyways because it's funny, right?
Because if you still listen to us after you hear this, then you're awesome.
So, happy birthday and happy new year and Merry Christmas.
It is so very crucial in maintaining your aquaria, providing good bacteria with lots of surface area.
The water quality without them would be worse than horrible, from water change to water change in order categorical.
They're very well acquainted with the toxin called ammonia. When your fish excrete it, they soon make themselves at homeia.
Nitrate is their first product, and nitrate is the second one. Second one. Which aquatic plants can use as it provides them nitrogen?
So, whether you include robust amounts of filter media or rely on gravel to give them a place to feed ya.
It is so very crucial in maintaining your aquaria, providing good bacteria with lots of surface area. It is so very crucial in maintaining your aquaria, providing good bacteria with lots of surface area.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.